Would you like to retire with enough? My name is Peter Guidry, and I am the host of the Retiring with Enough podcast. This podcast note is being inserted so that listeners of the Retiring with Enough podcast and the Retirement and IRA show will understand that this particular podcast episode was recorded on March 22nd of this year, well before the death of Henry Saunier, Jim's father, on April 16th of this year. As such, there is no reference to Jim's father or Jim's father passing in the podcast, but I would like to take this public opportunity to express my condolences to Jim and to all of his family, and to let you know, Jim, that all of you are in my thoughts and prayers. And just like your reference and dedication of the Retirement and IRA show recent episodes to your father, I'd also like to dedicate this podcast to Henry G. Saunier, Jim's father. Join me today for a one-on-one conversation with Jim Saunier, certified financial planner, founder of Saunier & Associates, and co-host of the Retirement and IRA show. This morning, I'd like to welcome Jim Saunier to the Retiring with Enough podcast. Jim and I met last fall at a retirement conference in Fort Worth, Texas, where Jim was one of the keynote speakers. I actually walked up to Jim at a social and introduced myself, and he and I shared an evening meal together, and I found him to be a very personable and engaging person. Actually, as personable and engaging as he is during his podcast. Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here, Peter.
And so what I want to do, during your presentation at the retirement seminar, you gave a sketch of yourself. You know, I found it interesting. I want to go over some of these things with you kind of quickly. You have not obviously been a financial planner all your life. Your former occupation was actually as a police officer in Boston. Is that correct?
A police officer, yes. Not in Boston. I lived in a city called New Bedford.
Okay, very
south
good.
South of Boston, yes.
Gotcha. And so there was a life-changing event, and I want to come back to that because I think it's really important. But I want to kind of bring everybody who's listening up to speed on where you are now. And then we're going to circle back to that event because, like I said, I think it's very important. You went through Boston University's program for financial planners in 1995, passed the exam 2 years later in 1997. And 2 years after that, in 1999, you resigned your appointment as a police officer, moved to Colorado, and began your journey as a certified financial planner. You said that you started your own firm, of course, Jim Saunier & Associates, which is a SEC-registered investment advisor. And your firm specializes in helping people to transition from the accumulation phase to the retirement or decumulation phase. And I think that's important too, Jim, because for a lot of people, they just feel like a financial planner is a financial planner. They don't really understand that there's a big difference between financial planners who work with people in the accumulation phase and financial planners who actually specialize in the retirement or the decumulation phase. And so I want to speak about that also. And of course, I want to mention that you and Chris have the Retirement and IRA show, which I think you started in 2015. I went back and I looked that up. So you've been doing that for a while also.
Okay, I'm ready when you are to go down any of those avenues that you.
Okay, so let's talk about your life-changing event. Like I said, I feel like that's important.
Well, it is. Everybody wonders, how did you go from becoming a cop to becoming a retirement planner? And it's one of those things that I just think happened at the right time. Obviously, if I never had the experience that I had, we probably wouldn't be chatting today, and I would still be a police officer somewhere. My aim was to get my master's in criminal justice, which I did, and become chief of police in some city somewhere in America. That was what I wanted to do. I wanted to become a chief of police somewhere. But probably about 8 years into my career, I just started having second doubts. So the seed was already planted in my head if I wanted to be a police officer for the rest of my life or not. So I think what happened next was just an avenue for me to explore. But I was in my early 30s, I think 30, 31, somewhere around there. And I've always looked young for my age, so I couldn't have looked more than 20, 21 years old. And I had been a police officer for several years, and I was in a grocery store. And when I was a police officer, you're in kind of what's called cop mode, or at least that's what we used to call it. And it's just that you're trying to be a little bit more attentive to your surroundings and a little bit more attentive to the people around you. And I went into the self-checkout line in this grocery store, and there's nobody else in the line except for an elderly woman in front of me. And when I started putting my groceries down on the conveyor belt, I just had a sense that something was wrong with her, mostly because she'd never looked over and acknowledged me. She never kind of just quickly glanced to her left just to see who was this person putting groceries down next to hers. She kept staring, Peter, at the checkout screen, intently staring. I kind of liken it to Mike Singletary, how he used to, I don't know if you're a football fan or not, but how they used to key on his eyes as he was staring at the quarterback. Her eyes were like Singletary's eyes staring at a quarterback, just staring at the checkout screen as her groceries were being scanned. And when the last item was picked up by the clerk and scanned, I knew something was wrong because her body language let it out. Her shoulders started to slump down. She let out a silent, but I could clearly hear it sigh. She went, and she looked at the clerk and she said, "Can you remove those? I can't afford them." And then I understood why she was staring at the computer screen so intently. She had a budget and she couldn't go over that budget. And that last item went over the budget. So the clerk took that item, pressed some keys on the keyboard of the register, scanned it and put it down to remove the charge. And she just put it down next to her. And I don't know why I did what I did next, but I reached over the counter, grabbed that item and put it back down on the woman's side of the checkout counter. And I told the clerk that I would buy those for her. And I did. And what I ended up buying for that woman was a 1-pint container of strawberries. And I remember I gave the clerk $2 and I got change back. Again, this is in the 90s. Strawberries weren't that expensive back then. So I don't even know how much they were, but they were less than $2, but more than a dollar. And the woman started thanking me as if I parted the Red Sea for her. In the middle of the grocery store, she's just thanking me and thanking me, going on and on, thanking me. And I kept telling her it was okay. It was my pleasure. You know, have a nice day. It's okay. You know, enjoy the strawberries. And eventually she finished and she started to walk out the store, but she had to have thanked me for half a dozen times. And that's no exaggeration. And then I didn't think anything else of it. I did my checkout, and because it was the quick checkout line, I didn't have a carriage. And I had two bags in my hand as I was walking out of the grocery store. And when I got into the parking lot, there was the woman again. And she wheeled her carriage over to me and she starts thanking me, Peter, again in the parking lot, right in the middle of everybody. And I kept telling her, "Ma'am, it's okay." And I admit, I started to get annoyed. It was a pint of strawberries. It was no big deal. And I wanted to get out of there. And I said, "Ma'am, it was my pleasure." And I turned to walk away. And what she did next changed my life. And I'd like to think has changed the lives of hundreds, if not thousands, of retirees who follow my podcast. And this is almost verbatim. Even though this happened over 35 years ago, I've never forgot what she did and what she said to me. She actually reached up and grabbed me by the shoulder and pulled down on my shoulder. And as I turned to her, she pointed her finger right up, and she was shorter than me, so she had to point her hand up. She pointed her finger right up into my face and said, "No, you don't understand." That's an exact quote. And I looked at her. Now the cop in me is wondering, what don't I understand? So I said to her, "What don't I understand?" And she went on to tell me, she said, "I'm 78 years old and I live on just Social Security. And my next check doesn't come for 10 days. Back then, checks were mailed. Today, it's all electronic. And if you didn't buy me strawberries, I wouldn't have had any. And I love strawberries." And I think in typical Massachusetts fashion, where we kind of don't like to take anything from anyone, she, after saying that, looked up at me and she said, "So, thank you." And she really accentuated that last thank you. And with that, she turned and walked away. And I know it probably seems silly. I was floored. And I just watched her walk away. And I thought to myself, this is it? This is what happens when we get old? We can't afford strawberries? I kid you not, folks. That's what I was thinking. I'm a 31-year-old police officer, making pretty good money, working a lot of overtime shifts, can afford pretty much anything that I wanted to support the type of lifestyle that I had. I had nobody old in my older. I'm 60 now, so 78's not that old. I knew nobody elderly in my life. The only elderly people I would run into would be people that I sadly met as a police officer, and it usually wasn't under good circumstances. My grandparents had passed away. My parents were younger than I am now. And I couldn't help but think, this is what happens to us when we get old. We can't afford strawberries. And I said to myself out loud, "I'm not going to let this happen to me." And if anybody was around me, they're probably wondering, what the hell is this guy doing? He's not moving. He's watching this old lady talking to himself. And I walked back to my car. I put the groceries in it. And back then, Peter, there was no internet. You couldn't go home and Google, how do you retire? I actually drove back. If you wanted to learn something back then, you went to a library or you went to a bookstore. I drove to a bookstore. And I went in. And I bought all these different types of magazines. I know it was Money, Kiplinger is another one, you'll laugh, called Mutual Fund Magazine. It's not even published anymore. I didn't even know what a mutual fund was, but they had a whole magazine on. And I just got enthralled by it. I just wanted to learn as much and much as I could. And that's what I think lit the spark, lit the fire in me. At first, I went and studied general financial planning and was taught the way the industry is, which I can't stand. I hate my industry. And it was all about investing, and you got to gather assets. And back in the 90s and early 2000s, it was all about commissions. Now it's all about AUM fees, but it was all about selling. But I kind of tried to filter that out and just keep trying to learn and study what I feel to be true financial planning. And the rest, as they say, is history. So that's how it happened. And when you pass the CFP exam the way I did, I had no industry experience. And I remember, and I don't know why instructors do this. I would be at BU, Boston University, at their night program. And you have to stand up in class. It seemed that every single class, introduce yourself to the class and say who you are and why you're there. And everybody would stand up. Most of them were from Fidelity, which is based out of Boston. So they were from Fidelity, or they worked for this company or that company. And I'd stand up and say, "Hey, I'm Jim. I'm a cop. And I just enjoy this. So I'm here trying to learn." And it used to elicit a giggle in the class. But that's what I did. And when I passed the exam in 97, simple math says I have 5 years to get 3 years experience in the industry, or I have to take the exam again. And I didn't want to take that exam again. So 2 years into that 5-year period is when I decided to resign my commission as a police officer. I moved out west to Colorado, got a job in the industry, and here I am today.
I felt like that story is very important. I don't know if you're aware of the fact that I practice dentistry, and I have practiced for over 45 years, and that some form of that story has played out in my office numerous times also. And it always really tugs at my heart when people come in, especially when they're in pain and they don't have money. They don't have enough money to pay for just their basic necessities and basic needs. And I've always felt like that's been a horrible problem. And that's kind of what's moved me in where I've gone now from full-time practice to helping people with retirement planning. I'm not a certified financial planner, but I do have a charter in retirement planning, and it's been a fun journey for me. And so kind of along those lines, I wanted to ask you about some of your own retirement plans. I think listeners will be interested in that. And I kind of want to lead in with the fact that when we spoke and on your podcast, you've been very upfront about some health issues that you had. And have those health issues changed your view of retirement, or have they modified your plans for retirement?
Well, my issues, for those who don't know, and I would imagine most of the people listening to this don't know, is I suffered a massive stroke at age 57 in just 3 years ago now, so 2021. And the doctor, the neurologist who saved my life, they flew me by medevac helicopter down to Anschutz in South Denver and performed an emergency thrombectomy. The physician told me the next day I would either be paralyzed or dead when I first got to the hospital, and he was surprised I was neither. And he said there was less than a 1% chance for me to have such a full recovery because my stroke was so severe. I was paralyzed for a while, but I came out of it. It's just, we don't know why, but I did. Everybody wonders, did you have a come to Jesus moment? Do you now have a bucket list? Do you want to stop work and just start doing things? And strangely, the answer to that is no, Peter, because I'm a bachelor. I've never been married. I came close to being married once, and that didn't happen. I have no children. I have the business. I am so passionate over what I do. It would be like having a stroke and then deciding I'm going to walk away from my children and go enjoy my life. It's brought me closer to the business because there's so much left that I want to do. I am truly trying to create what in my eyes is going to be the ideal retirement planning practice. The retirement planning practice that will handle my retirement for me someday. And I'm not there yet. I think we're a long way towards being there. And I would hire my firm in a heartbeat. And of course, I'm biased on that one, of course.
You're just a bit prejudiced.
But there's so much more I want to do. So my stroke, if anything, has opened my eyes a lot to the way my own firm operated, how we did things, my experience with the healthcare system as I navigated the stroke, and then the diagnosis of the cause of the stroke, which turned out to be a condition called AFib, and then several heart procedures called ablations to try to control my AFib. And it's opened up my eyes to the good in the healthcare industry and the bad. And then I'm trying to apply that towards my own practice and what myself and my staff, I have a staff of seven, what we do to improve. So it hasn't forced me to look at my own retirement any different than what I currently do. I'm not walking away from my child. I will be with this firm in some capacity until I'm no longer here. I have no desire to stop doing what I'm doing. I just don't want the role that I'm currently doing. My role has changed. I hardly ever meet with clients face-to-face anymore. I'm more of the visionary. I'm the CEO, for lack of a better way, and it's only a small seven-person firm. But I'm the visionary. I'm trying to put together where I want to take the firm. I'm the one responsible for finding new staff because we're always looking to hire. I'm the one who's looking to put all that in, and my role's changing. But no, Peter, it hasn't affected my retirement because, again, I'm not going to walk away from what I call my child.
Now, kind of along those lines, Jim, have you made, as a result, I guess I would say, as a result of the health scare that you had, have you made any provisions for long-term care? Or because you're a single person, have you designated an advocate if you're unable to make your own healthcare decisions?
Yeah, that was one of the eye-opening aspects. There was a rule of thumb in my industry, and it still is there, that you encourage clients to examine long-term care insurance when they hit 60. And that was going to be my approach. Of course, my stroke and AFib put a nail in that coffin because both those conditions will keep me from getting LTC. Now, there's a couple of carriers that you can get some limited coverage policies. They don't do a full underwriting. They ask you a few medical questions. Those aren't true long-term care policies. Insurance companies, I'm an outrageous risk to them because I had one stroke. The physicians have already told me I have a 30% greater chance than anyone else of having a second or a third. And of course, AFib is not curable. They can control it. It could come back at any time, toss another blood clot, and cause another stroke. So long-term care in the traditional sense, no, can't get it. What have I had to do? Well, one of the things I did in 2009, right at the market bottom in real estate, was bought a property in a city called Fort Collins out here in Colorado in a very desirable location, renovated it into an office. And that building and the equity in it was going to help fund what I call your fun spending in retirement. And I simply have changed that and made that building and the equity within it my LTC plan, for lack of a better term. So to help fund some of my future expenses, I intend to use some of those dollars. Now, it's not a dogmatic decision. I may come across other assets as a business owner. The biggest asset I have is my business. My net worth is greatly tied into the firm, and I will monetize it. I have no intention of continuing to be the sole owner. Whether I sell it through an ESOP to employees, or sell it to a few key employees or an outside investor, I don't know. But the firm will be passed on and will continue. It's not going to go under. So what we always try to tell our clients is we're looking to make sure you have the dollars to cover certain aspects, but it doesn't mean if you earmark an asset like I have my office or earmark a particular account for certain expense, that those assets can only be used for that expense. But right now, in my mind, the office building is my long-term care funding vehicle.
There's also a process called geographic arbitrage. And one of the other things that I'm familiar with, but maybe listeners are not familiar with, is that you currently reside in Colorado, but you have said that you're going to move to a different location somewhere in the near future. And so I would assume that your personal residence in Colorado has had a lot of appreciation. And of course, geographic arbitrage is moving from an area where real estate prices are high to an area where real estate prices are lower. So is that part of your reason to move, or is it just because you want to find the perfect gardening spot?
The latter, not the former. We always tell our clients, you cannot look at your retirement through the eyes of someone in their 50s and 60s, but instead through the eyes of someone in their 70s and 80s, and possibly even your 90s or beyond. And in my 70s, 80s, and 90s, I will not be doing what I've done in Colorado in my 30s, 40s, 50s, and right now I'm just entering my 60s. I moved to Colorado because I do. I love the mountains. I love to hike. I love to hunt. I love to fish. And I can do all that out here. but I'm also not naive, and my body's not the same as it used to be. And I'm not just talking stroke, it's the normal aging process. And I also know as I get into my 70s and 80s, another passion of mine is gardening. I have vegetable garden, not flowers. And I have quite a large vegetable garden in my yard. I won't dispute that. My friends say, you don't have a hobby, you have an obsession. It's big. In fact, I have to have friends help me. And in exchange for vegetables, they come and help. So it's a nice size garden, I will freely admit it. But I love doing it. I just love being outside. I love doing that. And moving to the east where I grew up, I miss rain. Colorado is a incredibly beautiful, but also incredibly ugly state. I often joke, 3/4 of Colorado has views that are but ugly. And one view, which is to the west, that is absolutely gorgeous. But if you look to the north, the south, and the east, it's flat, it's brown, it's dry. We get 11 inches of rain a year in the Front Range if we're lucky. The soil is total clay. You look to the west, everybody thinks Colorado is just one big aspen or vale, and it's not. 80% of the population live in 130-mile-long, 20-mile-wide strip called the Front Range. So it's crowded, it's expensive, outrageously expensive. So there's a lot of negatives with the area as well that I don't think the 70 and 80-year-old Jim is going to like, but the 30, 40, 50-year-old Jim loves. The 60-year-old Jim is now questioning it. So my move is being driven more by looking out for the older me. We always tell our clients, retirement planning is a negotiation. My best analogy, Peter, for retirement planning is this. Everybody hold out your arms in front of you. You get your left hand up and your right hand up. Your left hand is the current you, and it is sitting on a seesaw bench. The right hand is the older you. It's sitting on the other side of the seesaw bench. Anything that I do as a retirement planner to help the younger you, so the early retiree you, enjoy yourself, so make you go up on the seesaw, is going to cause the older you to go down. The older you has to give something up in order for the younger you to enjoy themselves now, and vice versa. Every dollar the older you gives, the younger you rather, gives the older you to protect and maybe help you in your 80s and 90s, and you don't even know if you're going to live that long, is going to cause the older you to go up, but it causes the younger you to go down. My firm and any other competent retirement planning firm is that fulcrum. It's that metal bar across the center where we have to balance the wishes and wants of the younger you against the potential needs of the older you. And that's all retirement planning is. And one of the things that we have to get our clients to understand is you though have to look at the older you through older eyes. And I won't be hiking at 10,000 feet, hauling around a 7-pound rifle to go shoot an 800-pound elk anymore. I'll probably still hunt, but not in that capacity. I'm not going to be snowshoeing like I did last week at 11,000 feet for 6 miles. I can't do that, I don't think, in my 70s and 80s. But I'd love to live in an area, I feel, that has a little pond on the property and water actually falls from the sky and grass grows green again and I can have a garden. So that really is the reason I'm moving. It's because I understand it's for the older me. It's not for the younger me. It's for the older me. And then people will say, and your listeners might think the same, well, what if you move and you don't like it? You're going to fail. No, I get back in the car and I drive back to Colorado like I did 30 plus years ago, and I move back here. But I'll never know unless I move. But I truly do feel, Peter, in my heart, I'm making the right decision. And the 70, 80-year-old Jim, who's going to be gardening more and most likely hunting and hiking less, is going to enjoy that. It's not being done for the arbitrage. I'd have done it if it was the other way around and I had to pay more money to buy the house. I'm truly doing it because I find Colorado to be a beautiful, wonderful place, but it's very youth-centric. It's very activity-centric. And I don't feel older Jim will be feeling as welcome as 30, 40, and 50-year-old Jim did. When I go to Florida in the winter to visit my mom, who lives down there with my sister in the winter, and I spend 3-4 weeks there in the Venice, Sarasota area, I feel actually very wanted. Now, maybe the locals behind their breath don't really want us, but there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people in my generation and my age, and the hospitals to serve them, and the physical fitness places to serve them, and the massage parlors geared solely towards older people. I find that area to be very welcoming of someone as they age. I don't get that in Colorado.
So from your perspective as a financial planner, Jim, the biggest or the most common mistake that people make when planning for retirement, do you feel that that perspective you just gave, that people who are in their 50s or early 60s don't recognize the older you, they don't acknowledge that older you, do you feel like that's kind of a common mistake, or maybe one of the biggest mistakes that people make when planning for retirement?
I don't know if I'd put it in the category of biggest, but common, absolutely. It's because you go places on vacation and you think, this is great. I'm going to do this all the time. And you think, oh, I love, it's a beautiful state. And if anybody's thinking of retiring here, don't let what I'm sharing with you sway you. If it rained here and the soil was better, I might consider staying, seriously. If you are fed up with rain and you want a dry climate, Colorado's a beautiful place. Okay, back to what we were getting at. We see that happening a lot. People sometimes thinking more emotionally than rationally. I probably think far more rationally than emotionally. And we do have people who will relocate somewhere or move somewhere and then later realize, no, not so much, I don't like it. Or we often have people who retire and realize a couple of years into it, not contributing anymore, not feeling like you're accomplishing things, not feeling as if your opinion and your activities have self-worth. They can't relate to that, and they want to get back and do something. I'm not saying they may go back to work with what they used to do. Not everybody is blessed like me. I don't have a job. I have a life, and my life just happens to involve my job. But we see people going back into the workforce somehow. I had one client who loved to garden like myself. She certainly didn't need the money, but she hated not feeling needed. She took a job at Lowe's working in the garden center, and she loves it, helping people understand their plants. Don't be so surprised if in 20 years you see me at a Lowe's somewhere helping people understand how to garden. It's just, we like as humans to feel that. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's the biggest issue that people face, but it is an issue that they do run into.
That kind of leads me into the next question, which would be, how would you describe Jim Saunier, the person, in 15 years or 20 years? Where do you see yourself?
Oh, Lord.
that's a tougher one.
You know, when we begin a retirement analysis for someone and we begin delivering it, we tell them pretty much everything I'm going to review with you is wrong, because it is. The weatherman can't tell you what the weather's going to be next week. How am I going to tell you where you're going to be in 15, 20, 25 years? So I could sit here and tell you what I think might happen. I'll be involved with the firm at some level, much, much less than what I am now. I may be living in Northern Kentucky or Southern Ohio on 2 to 5 acres of land with a pond, most likely have a Chesapeake Bay Retriever and a wonderful garden. Hopefully a loving wife. But is that going to happen, Peter? I have no idea. No idea at all. So we always tell people that your retirement plan is etched in jello, not in stone. And it's going to change. And you have to be ready to change with it.
If someone would have told me 10 years ago, when I transferred my practice to a younger practitioner, 10 years from now, you'll be on a computer with your own podcast speaking with Jim Saunier. Yeah, it would not have been anywhere on my radar. So I totally agree with you. We never know what the future holds. And for me, it's been a great ride. My retirement has been wonderful. I'm just loving every day. And so, recently I had a conversation with another practitioner, and he was concerned because he said, I really don't have a lot of hobbies. I like to work. I still enjoy treating people. I don't have a lot of hobbies. What should I do? And what I told him is what exactly you expressed. And that is, if you enjoy working, keep working. You know, that becomes your hobby, so to speak.
I mean, I agree. I see it a lot. It's not everybody is in my or that other gentleman's situation. And I freely recognize that. I work with just retirees. My firm specializes in just retirees. We don't work with 20, 30, 40-year-olds. We just don't. So a lot of people, though, who don't have their own practice or their own business, they do want to leave the field that they're in, but they also would like to do something else. We see that quite a bit. I want to get to the point, Jim, where I don't need this job that's helping me bring in $230,000 a year and fund my lifestyle. I want to get to a level where I can go to Lowe's and help people learn how to garden. Get me to that level. So everybody looks at their lives differently. And I have several close friends who are retired right now out here in Colorado, and they accept what I do. They say, when are you going to stop? I don't want to. But they'll share with me that they wanted to stop what they did because their heart wasn't into it. They didn't love it. They didn't like, quote unquote, working for the man. And they're perfectly happy being retired. So it's, again, to me, retirement is a state of mind. It's whatever you think it is. And you just navigate from there.
Let's speak for just a few minutes, if possible. Your firm has, and you've developed what's called your secure retirement income process. We have just a few minutes left here, and I don't want to open up a can of worms. But again, I think that the process that you employ that I'm aware of and familiar with is very unique. Can you just kind of briefly address that kind of on a high level? Because I think a lot of listeners would really be interested in that. And after that, I want you to tell listeners where they can find you or how they can reach you.
Do you listen to my podcast? Because what you asked me to do is impossible.
But you know what, Jim? So I think you're correct. Now, we've gone through a bunch of questions here, and it's been just a few minutes. I think Chris is actually the long-winded one. You've been very succinct and brief in your answers.
For those who don't know, I do host a podcast called The Retirement and IRA Show with a soon-to-be partner of mine named Chris Stein. He's been working with me, for 10, 12 years now, maybe 15. If you're saying the podcast is 15 years old, and he's been with me for over 15 years.
2015 is when you started.
Okay. Chris is the director of the financial planning program at Colorado State University. But on the podcast, he has the reputation of being very academic, obviously, very succinct, to the point. And I have a reputation of just going down rabbit holes, or like a dog seeing a squirrel, just going off in a different direction and going deep in. So when Peter asks me to say very briefly what we do, it's impossible. I can say it is a dramatically different approach than any out there for retirement planning. We created it ourselves. It takes everything that I don't like about my industry and the way they project retirement, and try to do it in a more pragmatic, realistic way, all keeping in mind the woman I bought strawberries for. When I say she changed my life, she did. I'm not a chief of police somewhere. I'm a retirement planner because of her. And I just took her situation and just tried to think of it, Peter, in a realistic manner and came up with concepts we call the minimum dignity floor, secure income. We have a ultimate concept called the fun number, which has proven to be hugely popular with people who believe in our approach. The concept of managing your assets, dramatically different. We did a series on our podcast, a show called The Opposite. And if you like, I love Seinfeld. We all grew up with Seinfeld. Seinfeld has an episode called The Opposite, where George Costanza literally did the opposite of anything that he would have normally done. And everything worked out perfect for him. So we featured that show and a few little snippets from it because it's funny. But in reality, trying to get people to understand, if you approach retirement, managing your money, now I'm talking, managing your assets in retirement in the same manner you did during the accumulation phase, you're going to set yourself up for failure. You have to do the opposite because it's the opposite that's happening to your portfolio. There's no longer positive dollars coming in. There's negative dollars coming in. There's no longer buying low. You are now selling low in a market drop. And just your whole life, listen to the episode. I don't even know if the episode is still there. We'll have to re-record it. Retirement is the mirror opposite. And one of the mistakes we see constantly by individuals and sadly the advisors who serve them is they continue what they were doing in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. They'll continue it into their 60s, 70s, and 80s. And in my opinion, unnecessarily constrain spending on fun. That's why I came up with the concept of the see-through portfolio and the fun number. If you are retiring with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 million, or 100, 200, 300, 400, 500,000, doesn't matter, whatever you have amassed, how much of that can you truly spend on fun? And why are you going to restrict yourself to that godforsaken, stupid 4% safe withdrawal rate for the rest of your life on fun? Seriously? I should be dead. I can sadly tell you so many stories of people who retired with my firm's help only to die 3 years or less. Too many of those stories, or stories of not dying, but being diagnosed with Parkinson's or having a stroke and are now not healed like me, but paralyzed. Or something happens to someone in their family and they just can't go and spend on fun. This notion, you're going to restrict your spending. When you retire, you only have a certain number of years before you cannot spend on fun the way you do now. You have three phases. We did not come up with these names. A gentleman named Stein, not Chris Stein, I think it was Michael Stein from Colorado, but he coined these terms in the 70s. Go-go, slow-go, no-go. You will have a go-go phase of retirement. We believe in trying to find your fun number, which is simply out of your whole portfolio. How much of it can you truly spend on fun? We have a whole process for doing it. I cannot explain it in 5 minutes. But once you identify your fun number, we want you to spend the majority of it in your go-go years. I don't limit our clients to a 4% withdrawal rate on their fun. I don't care how fast they spend it. That's your budget. That's your fun budget. Go enjoy it. Now, there's a lot more to it, Pete, than that, but you asked me to be brief.
So for listeners that are interested, on Jim's podcast site, the Retirement and IRA show, I think y'all actually did a three-show series on minimum dignity floor, and people can search those out and get a much more extensive program of, you know, listen to it in much more depth. Jim, you did a really good job of keeping it high level, and I appreciate that. But people who, and listeners who are interested, can search out the Retirement and IRA show and get a much deeper explanation on that and a lot of other retirement related things. And so with that, Jim, I want to close it out today. And could you please tell the listeners how they can reach you, or, and if they wanted to engage Sonier and Associates, what would that process look like?
Well, the best thing to do is to subscribe and listen to our podcast. It's not a blatant attempt to get more listeners. We have tons of listeners. We are not accepting new clients, though. So that's the difficulty. Getting us to be able to help you is a process. You generally have to wait. But I would say, don't call us and say, hey, I want to engage you. I heard you on Peter's podcast. We make people learn our process first. We will send you podcast recordings that you have to listen to and understand what we do. And then you wait. We're booking into 2025 now if you want to work with us on a retirement plan. So what I would just encourage you to do, and don't just look at my approach. There's many other approaches to retirement planning. You don't have to believe in the way I do it at all. But what I would encourage you to do is learn all you can. Listen to my show if you want. Listen to other shows. Listen to Peter's show. Try to decide what works for you. On our podcast, we host a quarterly endeavor called Dialogue, and people will share with us, and we chat through their dialogue about how they manage their retirement, what they do. So there's many, many different ways of doing it. But if you're interested in learning more about what we do, I would say just subscribe to our podcast on whatever podcast streaming service you use. I will say, Peter, beginning probably in April sometime, I'm thinking the first or second week of April, we will start to do a whole series again, because the last time we did that series was in 2020. So we will start to do an entire series again of our approach. And I don't want to say unique to us, but one of the important things is we don't just share with people how we do things. We share with people why. Why are we going to do it this way? So we do a whole series of shows in our approach to asset management, our approach to funding your retirement. It'll probably be about 7 to 10 shows long. Trust me, if you never heard me before, I can easily do 7 to 10 shows on all this. So listen to that if you want to learn more of our approach, but keep an open mind. Our approach may not be right for you. Someone else's approach may be.
Well, Jim, thanks so much for sharing yourself and sharing your knowledge with us today. I personally am a subscriber to the Retirement and IRA Show. I've listened to it, and it is really good. It's very insightful. Chris is a little bit long-winded, but you can just kind of get past that. You can do okay. Thanks again, Jim, for all the information today.
All right, Peter, it's been a pleasure. You have yourself a great day.
Thanks, Jim. Bye-bye.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please feel free to leave a review. And if you want to partake in an online conversation, be sure to search for the Retiring with Enough group on Facebook. Thanks. The information and opinions contained on this podcast are for general education and are considered general communications. Information on the podcast was obtained from various sources, and Retiring with Enough does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information presented. Retiring with Enough strongly recommends that you perform your own independent research and/or speak with a qualified investment professional, legal advisor, or tax professional before making any financial decisions. The information and opinions expressed should not be construed as financial planning and does not consider the economic status or risk profile of any specific person, nor does it constitute an offer to buy or sell securities.